This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
You're listening to the Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us today. And just a massive thank you before we get into today's podcast to all who joined us for our In Transition with Kyle Buckingham. And a massive congratulations to Dan Wilson for winning the NutriBullet that we were giving away. Congrats, Dan. Thanks for all your support here on the Kona Edge. We'll be doing more of those In Transition sessions in the new year, so keep an eye out for that. I'm having a bit of a chuckle to myself as well because there have been some issues. I shouldn't actually be talking about this on the podcast, but it's actually very funny. Within my day job, it's quite a weird situation, okay? So I work for the national broadcaster here in South Africa, and they've obviously got two different types of staff. They've got full-time staff and they've got freelance staff, and I'm on the freelance staff. But all the full-time staff are on strike at the moment. So we are having endless issues of trying to get work done with half the people not working. It's actually been hilarious the way we've had to get things done. But as they say, it is what it is. Life will go on. But yeah, interesting to see guys demonstrating outside the building when we're coming into work. Entertaining, to say the least. But coming up on today's podcast, we head to Switzerland for the first time to catch up with our guest today and get to share another incredible Ironman story. That's coming up in a short while. And I mentioned the NutriBullet that we gave away. We're pretty much halfway through the month of December, which means you've only got a couple more weeks left to get yourself into the draw to win that Ironman entry. I'm going to be paying for somebody to race an Ironman to the value of $750. It doesn't have to be an Ironman branded race. It can be any race to the value of $750. So if you haven't entered yet, I'd suggest you do. You're running out of time, okay? The URL to get to is thekonaedge.com/win. That's where you can get all the details. That's thekonaedge.com/win. Make sure you get into the draw, because if you're not in it, you can't win it. Go check it out. thekonaedge.com/win. In the spotlight in the coach's corner today is MP Multisports. Their athlete-coach relationship is what makes MP Multisport unique in the coaching field. Their role is to ensure the coach relationship is evident in all their coaching interactions. MP Multisport coaching involves listening first to understand your needs as an athlete, continuous analyzation by them, and implementation by you. They don't focus on mass-produced training plans or categorize their athletes, because no two athletes are the same. There's more to your needs than swim, bike, and run portion of training. Too often, athletes will push through their training laps and miles, but forget about the impact in other areas of their lives. To get to your goals, MP Multisport takes a holistic approach to the process, which includes the balance you have in your life, nutrition, core strength, and time management, as well as understanding those needs through communication. To find out more about MP Multisport, head over to the Coach's Corner. Just go to thekonaedge.com/coaching, or alternatively head straight through to their website. It's mpmultisport.com. If you're a coach, or if you have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured in the Coach's Corner, simply head over to that URL. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching, and scroll right down to the bottom of the page to get all the details. Listening to the Kona Edge, we head to Zurich now in Switzerland to catch up with Maddie Weitz. Maddie, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Brad. Happy to be here.
Maddie, this interview has been a long time coming. We've been chatting for a while over social media, and I'm really chuffed to be able to sit down and catch up with you. But let's talk about your journey into the sport of triathlon and sort of where it all started for you.
Sure, sounds good. So I grew up in the most western town of Germany, although I'm living in Switzerland now, and I had a bit of everything. I played handball for 8 years, which was nice and was a group sport, and I liked it. I did it more or less because everybody started at that age. It was young, and it was running. It was a team sport. I liked it. Then I went into martial arts quite a bit. I did judo. I did a bit of MMA and Wing Chun as well, some Chinese martial arts, and it was great. But I always loved to be outdoors. You know? Like, I love to be out in the woods running. I always did that parallel to that. So Yeah, 2012, I think, with a good friend of mine from Hempel back then. There was a little sprint triathlon in our hometown. And yeah, we just thought it was a fun idea. So we, yeah, I mean, we could swim a little bit. But then I borrowed a road bike from him and his brother. He had one. And so we started that sprint distance. And yeah, we, as everybody gets quickly addicted. So we finished and we loved it. And ever since, step by step, actually, a bit back and forth. But I always knew that was the thing I got to do.
You talk about a bit of handball and a bit of judo. Were you good at those? Were you very competitive?
It's hard to say because, I mean, I think I started handball exactly like 2 years too late because most of the guys that were in the team, then they had their slot and they had their dads that were handball coaches. And, I mean, it certainly wasn't bad, but certainly wasn't the best either because some of the guys are playing now in Bundesliga, like really the highest level. It was a great, great team. And still a great handball place in there. And so I was always, I think, 1 or 2 years too late in it to really, really give a go. But no, I always enjoyed it. And but yeah.
And as far as the move to triathlon, it's a big jump from a sprint to a full distance Ironman. Was it a natural progression for you? Once you'd done the sprint, did you go, oh, there's an Olympic distance, we're going to go and try that, and then on to half? Or did you go, you know what, I want to go do that big thing?
It was actually step by step, but I always enjoyed the challenge of it. That was the whole thing. For me, it was first somehow mastering the distances. So the next was then Olympic. And yeah, always naturally, I went quite hard and I blew up many, many times, as well as in Ironmans, like many times, can't tell you how many times. And yeah, and then I went to do my first half, which I thought was crazy back then. I think that was 2011. Something like that. And there I did my first half. I was really happy to finish and I was actually doing not too bad there. So I was doing even under 5 hours, which they told me was good. I didn't know. And so then I knew, I told my girlfriend back then, which is still my girlfriend now and biggest supporter, that yeah, one day in my life, I want to do this Ironman thing. It's such a crazy thing to do. One day I want to do it. And that was back in my studies in the Netherlands when I studied. And then she said, yeah, why don't you do it next year? And I said, and then the seed was planted, you know, because I knew back then I'm probably going to have more time and be more flexible now than ever. And then I signed up to Ironman Switzerland, where I live now, actually, which is quite funny, 6 years later. So I signed up for that. No coach, no money. I worked in an Irish pub, night shifts. So like because it was the only job you could get as a not fluent Dutch speaker with English came along. So yeah, I was doing night shifts there from starting, I think, 8 in the evening and until 7 in the morning. And then the next day, I mean, sleep a bit and then get the units in. And yeah, it was quite an adventure to just get the sign up money. You know, it was, I think, almost $1,000 or $800 back then. So as a student, that's not easy money.
Nanny, that's incredible. I mean, I've worked in my radio career, I've worked some night shifts, and I know how much that messes with your body. How did you cope training and working those sort of hours?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I mean, I didn't do it every day, but like at least 3 nights a week. And then I also had to do this little hobby of studying, which was also quite intense. So plus exams and stuff. I don't know. I always knew that it was my dream. I loved to do it. But especially the people around me in the Irish pub, most of them were actually Irish. And they like their beer. They're a little bit like hobbits, you know, like dancing. And it's quite funny. But they admired me. But they, of course, tried to then, they want to have some shots as well. And some nights I said, okay, I'm going to have 2 shots. But I knew, like, if you had a long bike ride and a run and your legs are slowly falling apart in the middle of the night, you can't start taking shots too much. But, yeah, I found a nice balance, I think. Yeah.
Matty, I love that because I'm sitting here laughing because obviously, early in my radio days, I wasn't fit. A lot of people do know my story. I mean, I've lost a hell of a lot of weight, and that was my life. I was a DJ in a nightclub and a mm-hmm. coffee-drinking, smoking radio DJ. I was the antithesis of what sort of you think of an Ironman triathlete. So I can sympathize with you, and I know there's no ways that I would have been training back then. I don't know how you did it, but your first experience of that Ironman, tell me a little bit about that first race.
The first race I was super excited to start, but yeah, I knew I was going to finish. I don't know why. Beforehand, everybody was like, I don't know, are you going to finish? But I knew I was going to finish. I always knew deep inside of me certain things. I just knew. Same with the Kona thing. I knew somehow I could do it. Swim, it started out with a guy that gave me a wetsuit that was in the end two sizes too small. So I checked afterwards my heart rate, which was not 193 average. So my little swim experience was a bit different because it started with a cramp pretty early on. And got out of the water, and then on my race bike, which had some aero bars on it, but it was very good for the start. And biked quite okay, I think. But I was quite happy. And then I think I did a 540 in Switzerland. So like 112 swim. Yeah, that was back then. 112 swim, 540 bike. And then, then I actually, because in training I did those units and I ran like 4:30 pace, and I thought, hey, this feels quite all right. I can do that in Ironman. I didn't even know what a 5:30 pace is, which is like a 3:10 or below 3:10 marathon, which is ridiculous. You know, I mean, of course I couldn't do that, but I thought, yeah, I'm going to start running with that. So I did that for like 10K, and then it started, as you know. And then I just shuffled home, and but I still enjoyed it. I mean, of course, I didn't have the base of training. I didn't have the experience with nutrition, many things that I know now. But I'm still super happy how I did it. So I finished just very shy over 11 hours, so 11:40, I think. And I was 22 back then. So either way, I was super happy and happiest. There's still a picture of me with my girlfriend, and I'm like really still one of my most positive experiences ever.
Yeah, that first Ironman you do is always a special one. And I think that almost dictates what you're going to do in the sport, because if you have a horrible experience first time out, it's so hard to come back from that. But if you have a good experience, the bug just bites, because it is an amazing event. And once you've finished an Ironman, you think you can pretty much do anything.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Maddie, as far as Kona aspirations, when did you start thinking about, you know what, maybe I could go and race on the Big Island?
I think it started, I didn't know much before my first Ironman, but then I was sitting at the award ceremony there with my cereals and yogurt and coffee, feeling all happy. And then I saw those super fit young guys in my age group. I was 18 to 24 back then. I saw them get their name called and say, yeah, you made it to Kona. I was only the first guy, of course, I made it. I did a 906 or something. I think he's grown now, of course. And so I saw that. And then I showed this video about Kona and Hawaii. And and pretty much then I knew, I saw that this is ridiculous. This is a dream. But I knew I was still quite far away from that to even make it. But I wasn't all the time Kona. I was just about enjoying the sport and doing training well. But it just over years, it just got more on the one hand, and more specific with coaching then it started, and some other things that actually brought me then to my first Kona qualification 2016.
I love the fact that you said it wasn't all about Kona. It was a process of just getting better. There are, and we've spoken to quite a few of them here on the podcast, people who qualify first time out. They go and do their first Ironman, and they happen to get a slot. They don't know too much about it. But for the most part, to get to Kona is a long-term project. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a couple of seasons, a few seasons that you put consistent, or you train consistently, and you put in the hard work, and eventually you get rewarded.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think my first Kona qualification was maybe even a touch easier than, I mean, we get to that later, I guess. I'd qualified for 2018 now, and there I noticed, actually the second one, I noticed how ridiculously difficult it is, like really difficult. And the first one, I mean, it wasn't easy certainly, but I mean, I still had a little bit of a blow up in the middle of the run, and that's just not possible anymore. You can't have that. And that was again Switzerland 2016, and back then I already lived here, and I had had a great coach, the first coach, and I had her for 5 years, and it was a lot of feeling based, and that was good. And that race there, I knew for the first time, hey, you want to really go and try to qualify. And I knew there were more slots even. So I think top three in the age group got a slot in 25 to 29, which is quite a lot. I think it was because it was the anniversary of the event or something, there were more slots given. And I knew that's probably my best chance, being on the home course. I knew the course. I could drive it with eyes closed. Same the run, everything. I was more prepared than ever for the Ironman distance. And yeah, started out well and swam well, bike well, all I planned. And then run, I think also because it was feeling based and not super, super specific on like 10th of a second per kilometer the pace, let's say, which makes physiologically a difference. I started running like a little touch too quick, I think. And yeah, after 16 to 19K, I had quite the hole with the, yeah, I think it was on one hand bad pacing in the beginning of the run. Plus, I think it was quite a hot day actually for Switzerland. It's a bit tricky. You never know what can be. The first Ironman in Switzerland was, for example, hail and sunshine, and all I had all four seasons in one day. And now was more of the on the hot side, like 30 plus. And although there are some shady parts, but it was hot and I didn't breathe properly, so I started cramping my diaphragm. And I still have this picture where I'm like walking for the aid stations, and but somehow I didn't panic. I don't know if it's in me, or I'm more of a calm person, actually. Maybe that helps to stay relaxed and do the best I can in a race. I don't freak out as quickly in a race, for sure not. When I'm training, maybe, but not when I race. And so, yeah, then somehow I came back and I had my hole and I kept going. And then I came in third in my age group and got the Kona slot. So that was absolutely incredible, yeah.
Brilliant. And you talk about second time round qualifying a lot harder. You've just got back from Ironman Florida as we were recording this, where you've picked up a qualification for 2018. You ended up doing, I think, a 9.06. Tell me the difference between the two in your experience from that first qualification to this one.
The difference is, I mean, I do have a different coach now, and it's very science-based, and the training is more specific, and also I train harder and more and different. And I felt, I think for the first time ever, I felt really prepared for the Ironman distance. I mean, I've done it a few years, but it was always in a marathon, something happening, and then you suffer so much, which you even shouldn't. And I think the ideal pacing made a huge difference. I feel I had really almost perfect day. I mean, it's Ironman, so it's always something happening. So for some weird reasons, I think because of the dolphin dives and running in, which I wasn't used to in a swim, I got in a swim already cramp in my hamstring and stuff. But I don't know, it's just small details. It's never a perfect day. I don't think that exists. But as far as Ironman goes, I think that's as perfect as it can get. So I had a sub 60 minute swim, the first time ever for me. Super happy that work paid off. And I biked and I just stick to my wattage. And yeah, that was interesting because then most people, I'm quite surprised that so many athletes, they are good on the 70.3 distance, but they don't know how to pace it. They have no idea. It's really quite funny. I mean, the number one tip, if you want to qualify, like really just pace it well. If your coach gives you wattage, then just stick to the numbers, be confident in them and do it. Because most people, again, started with the bike too hard. And I just waited and waited until 140K and then upped the wattage a little bit on the last 40K. And I was just flying by people and keeping to my mantras. One of my mantras was I just kept saying it to myself because it kind of got me pumped. I was always saying the German pain train is coming. And I was just saying that to myself and picking up the broken wings on the way. So that was making me feel quite good. And then, yeah. Came off the bike 4:43, ridiculous bike time. I was thinking, what's going on now? But I knew I could do it because of the wattage. Then I started the run and I actually met the guy. Again, awesome experience about Ironman. You always meet people. I met an American, Steve Jackson. He also qualified in the end. And we actually, the first 10K or even 20K, it feels so easy. It's really like a Sunday jog. It's ridiculous how easy it feels and it has to feel. Because you want to go, your body feels like going, and all the other people in my age group, they just went, and my girlfriend saw the ticker, the life ticker, and they were all running below 3 hour pace, and she thought, oh, okay, is it going to work or not? But she just kept calm, and I kept calm, did my thing, kept running my paces that I was supposed to hit them each kilometer, so I was happy. And then I just told myself, also mentally, I think it's pretty good, if you say, okay, your race really starts at mile 20, so 32K, that's when I put the hammer down. That's when I want to mentally start to really suffer. Of course, before, I mean, it starts with then your muscles start to work and you have to focus on your breathing and the nutrition. But then 32K onwards, I told myself, okay, now you go. Now you go hard. Now you want to suffer for the last hour-ish or 45 minutes. Go really hard. And that's what I did as well. And then I ended up with a fastest run split of the day of my age group. So 3:17 in pretty hot conditions. Super happy. 9:06, absolutely stoked still. Still not, I haven't really fully realized it yet, I guess.
That's amazing. I love the way you're talking about believing in the numbers and the work you've done and the patience of not going out and sort of blowing your race and just being confident enough knowing that, you know what, if I stick to these numbers and go according to the race plan, it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, you don't know what's going to happen because, I mean, in the end, I just want to execute the race that I know I physically can and maybe up it a bit mentally in the end, if I can. But what can I do if, for example, the first guy, he biked in my age group, really great guy from France, and he biked the 4:14. He wanted to break the Ironman French record before he said it, and he biked the 4:14. And I mean, that's amazing for him. And he did it in the end. So, I mean, what can I do about it? I can be sad about it or whatever, but I can't change my effort and what I can do. And, of course, he couldn't run the perfect run after, but he still had a 3:30 race, and he 3:30 marathon, and then had a 8:53. So I can't change that. I mean, I can't pull 10 minutes out of my closet like that. So I'm super happy, and I'm happy it worked, but it might as well not work, because if you get third for whatever reason because of a flat, then you don't have Kona qualification. So that's then how it is. That's the day itself. You can influence it, you can do your best, and then I'm happy.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the coaching. You've mentioned when you started, you didn't have a coach. You then got a coach who worked mostly on Phil, and you're now working with someone who's a lot more scientific, and it's someone who's no stranger to the Kona Edge. We've shared his story on here. We've spoken to him quite a few times. Dr. Daniel Plews from New Zealand. Tell me a little bit about how you hooked up with Dan and the sort of working with someone like Dan.
So I did, I read an article about him. I mean, I was always quite scientifically interested, also because of my studies, and I was always curious to learn more. And then I saw an article about the fat-adapted athlete, about one of his athletes, Swiss-based triathlete, Jan van Berkel. And they talked about how the fat adaptation influenced the performance of him, and how they had some visceral fat in the body because of all the carbs and sugar eating, and I don't know, many things. And it was super interesting. And I just was quite early on. I mean, I noticed at some point that that feeling based training, that I'm feeling like, yeah, I'm not getting the edge anymore. I mean, it was amazing how the last coach, she built me up for 5 years, and with that, I really have to thank her a lot for everything she did. And it was amazing. She got me to Kona and everything. But also I felt at some point that I needed a little change, and I wanted that scientific part in it, because I really liked the objectivity which I have now. So I can really see week by week. For example, I have always 4 weeks blocks or 2 weeks blocks, and I can see several units. I can, let's say, four weeks in a row, each time the same unit, minimally adjusted. And I can see how my perceived effort is going low with that unit. I can see how that actually, then the heart rate is getting lower, paces are picking up. All those things, they make you, give you again confidence, knowing that you're doing the right thing and that you're progressing. And yeah, week by week, actually. So
that's incredible. Yeah. Talk to me. Obviously, you've qualified now. It's very early on in the sort of year from a qualification perspective for Kona. I mean, the last one's just happened. You've now qualified for the next one. What's the plan? Often we see guys qualifying, not last minute, but in the sort of month or two before, and they've still got that sort of base fitness that they then go and launch off of to Kona. But it's a long way out now. What's the plan for the next 11 or so months for you?
So the main goal is obviously Kona. I want to really do well there and the best performance I can get, because last time I was there, I think I had the first perfect Kona experience. I was enjoying the whole thing. I met a guy, the last 10K, a Brazilian guy, and he started to talk German suddenly because he studied in Germany. I thought I was like dehydrated because he started talking German, but he did talk German. And yeah, we just chatted long and had a great experience. But so I enjoyed the full race. I didn't kill myself on the last 10K to get 3 minutes quicker, because then I would have suffered and not enjoyed it. So I wanted to enjoy it, main goal, which I did. So next time I go there, which is going to be now 2018, I planned it kind of like that. I said I want to race it. I mean, I still want to be patient and all those things, but I want to race it. I really want to have a smile still on the end, but be even more tired maybe, and see what I can do. And I don't know if I can attack the top five in my age group. I will certainly do everything I can to get there. So that's exciting.
Mehdi, what's the attraction to Kona? You've been once before now. You said that first one you went out and just enjoyed it. Now you want to go and see how good you actually are against the best in the world. What is it that draws people to the Big Island?
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to your podcast for a while, and most people say the same thing, and it is true. It's just a magical place. It's really hard to pinpoint because it's not only the race itself. I mean, of course, it's nice to see the vibe around it, the athletes and the whole buzz around it. But that's not the main thing even, because I'm a big fan of nature, as most triathletes are. So it's just the atmosphere, the people. Let's say you land there and the vibe you get immediately, this tranquility and the calmness of the people there, the locals, it immediately goes on you. And same as driving a car there. Like the first week, all the crazy Europeans, they ride way too quickly there, because there are so many stop signs on the road. It's more than normal states. I mean, there are barely any lights except for the highway, but in the Ali Drive and all those, there's so many stop signs, and you have to be calm to drive there, because they fully stop, wait 3 seconds, and then you go again 10 miles an hour. So even that driving there on Ali Drive, like, it takes you 2 to 3 days coming from busy and rushing Europe to adjust to that. But all those things and the nature itself, Mauna Kea, and yeah, it's really hard to pinpoint. But I would say the magical vibe and the island itself, this spiritual place, it is really true.
What's the secret in your mind to qualifying? What does it take to qualify for Kona?
I think patience. Patience is one. You have to really want it, not just to prove to anybody else. You have to really want it. You have to love the sport, and not just, there are so many 1 or 2 year wonders who hit it out, get injured, overuse, and just run after numbers and rankings. And that's exactly how you stay 2 years in a sport, and then you're done with it, and then you're sick of it, because yeah, it's mentally taxing to do all that next to your work and with family and balance, and so it requires a lot of planning. So planning is definitely one that you need to take care of. You have to. I listened to another podcast, which I highly recommend, from Niyu Shobo's Sports Motivation. It's really good because he talks about goal setting as well. So I'm going to start doing that. I got myself a little booklet where I'm going to start writing things in, not only goals, but like really, like, I want to sit down like at the end of the week, like a Sunday evening, let's say. I want to plan out the week. So not only plan in things like training and work and those things, those obvious things which you do subconsciously anyways, the morning or the evening before the day. But I want to plan in, like, let's say here, those 2 hours are for relaxation. Those 2 or 3 hours or more are a date with my girlfriend, and this is quality time with her. So that way you really make sure that you stay balanced, and not while you, while you're working, you think about, okay, what do I have to train? While you're training, you think about, okay, I still got to cook and plan things for tomorrow. So making sure that you always stay in the moment of that, whatever you do, is essential, I think, to stay balanced. And meditation, for sure. Headspace, meditation, get that up, because you will have so many things running through your mind. I mean, everybody can do it for 1 or 2 months, heavy training load, but like to do it for over time, it's difficult. So you need to stay balanced mentally. Physically, I think everybody likes to hit out units, but you need to make sure of that's also what the Sports Motivation podcast talks about, the lowest hanging fruits first. So which means sleep, nutrition, and and balance in general. So we need to check those first. If you feel unbalanced, did you sleep enough? Did you drink enough? Did you eat well? And if you stick to those over time, train the best you can and stay balanced and having fun while you're at it, except maybe the last 4 weeks before the competition, they get a bit challenging. The fun is sometimes going a bit in the background because you get pretty tired. But I think if you do those over time and do the best you can, I mean, if you qualify at some point or not, but I mean, if you really stick to those over time, you will probably qualify at some point. And be smart about the race you pick. Pick a race that suits you, so to say. If you weigh 95 kilos, you should maybe go for Ironman France, stuff like that. So, those things are the main, I think.
You raised two things there. The one being picking the race. I'm going to ask you about that in a moment. But talk to me a little bit about getting the balance right from a work and family life and personal life perspective. That's something I think a lot of athletes struggle with. And I think that's where a lot of athletes, like you say, they get burnt out because they don't have that balance right. And you said it early on in our chat, your girlfriend's your biggest fan and your biggest supporter. How important is it to have somebody who buys into your goals and your dreams as well?
As number one, I mean, this is the most important for me. It's always that equation. Let's say it's not first triathlon and everything comes behind that. It's really first making sure that you have family life and your girlfriend and friends that is really set, not getting out of balance. You have to make sure, of course, you have to have an understanding partner or like friends, but you also have to give back. Then you can't always take and take if they cook for you here and there. I immediately feel like, okay, now I have to at some point plan something in that I give back to her. I can't always take and take and take. So you have to really keep the balance of that. But it is simply difficult. I definitely haven't figured it out yet, like how to get the whole balance, but I'm just trying my best to get there. And you do get out of balance. I mean, if you train a lot and still work, you will get out of balance. I don't think it's avoidable, but I used to, for example, that's why we come later to it, nutrition, I guess, is a big part to that. I used to become out of balance like a lot more, like let's say 2 to 3 times a week. I would have like 2 hours where I would feel really moody for no reason, really low energy and all those things. And I couldn't get out of it. And suddenly, yeah, 2 or 3 hours later, I was out of it. But that was exhausting, like really exhausting. It was not a specific thing I thought about. It was just, yeah, several things, I guess, but tiredness and all those things, not recovering well. But now those 2 to 3 times a week definitely is maximum once a week where I feel like an hour or two, like, oof, okay, this is challenging. But then I know how to get myself out of it. So like I said, meditation is a big thing. It should be really in your daily repertoire of things you should do. It's like brushing teeth, showering, meditation. It's headspace, starts with 3 minutes. You can't tell me you don't have 3 minutes. So use that time just as important as your teeth. So
I love that. I think that is brilliant. Maddie, and then just finally talking about choosing courses, you've got an Ironman literally on your doorstep, Ironman Zurich. You traveled across the ocean to Ironman Florida. I've never done Florida, but I've done Zurich. And what I've heard about Florida is it's pretty flat, it's fast, very different to Zurich. As a big guy myself, that bike course in Zurich wasn't fun, I can tell you that much. But courses for courses. You obviously, I mean, by your performance, are more suited to a fast, flatter one.
I do think so. I mean, it's also mentally that I like it. I noticed it the first time in Kona, 2016, because it was the first course that's kind of wavy, flat-ish, and where you have to stay a lot in the air position. And there I noticed first I liked it. I had really fun being stuck in that air position, making yourself small, and I really liked it from the start. And also I have to get out of my head by now that I'm not so heavy anymore, but I used to be quite, because I came from handball and I did a lot of gym. I used to be always on the heavy side. It got better and better, but I'm still... just my genetics, I guess, are like that by now, that I like quickly pick up muscle mass. And as soon as I look at a dumbbell, I'll probably already start gaining weight. So I have to really keep it a bit at the base. But I looked for something to qualify to 2018 Kona early. And so I checked the races. I mean, again, family first. I checked with my girlfriend and went to the races. And I talked to her, hey, which one do you like? Where would you like to visit and travel and have a holiday, which is just as important as the triathlon for me, to discover new places. And then we saw Ironman Florida, and it was kind of a great combination because I knew it's going to be flat-ish. Yeah, it's quite flat. And then a lot of air position, a lot of power. I mean, I think I'm more of a strength rider, so I know I can hold high power at that kind of flattish course, like on a hill, for example. I have a friend who weighs like 50 kilo-ish or a bit more. So if he's going on the hill with me with the same effort, he's just flying away. My 79, 78 kilos are just not made for that. But as soon as I go into flat, I have the same power, I'm gone. You know, that's something else. You have to know what your strength is and then play the cards.
Yeah, play to your strengths. I think that is some great advice. Maddie, it's been awesome catching up. Thank you so much for joining us on the Kona Edge today. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines and how you've got better over time, but we'll save that for another day. Thanks for your time today on the Kona Edge.
Sounds good. Cheers.
This episode of the Kone Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekonaedge.com/indoor. That's thekonaedge.com/indoor. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Kone Edge. Much appreciated. And before I go, another quick iTunes review for you. We've been getting some amazing ones in. Thank you so much to everyone who has left us a review. This one comes in from Jill84047, giving us a 5-star. A bit too short for a workout, but good. Depends how short your workouts are, Jill. Saying, this is fun, fast podcast. It's too short for a workout, but makes a nice warm-up. Good info and less fluff. Well, Jill, thank you so much. You're lucky. You got your iTunes review on a longer one today. I'm back again tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't left us an iTunes review yet, please do. It just really helps us get in front of more people and more triathletes just like you. And if you've got any value out of the show and you'd like to give something back, that is the easiest way. It doesn't cost you anything, and it really helps us out big time. So just head over to iTunes, click leave a review. It takes 20 seconds, and I'll give you a shout out on the podcast. It's as simple as that. And before I go, don't forget to get into that draw to win that Ironman entry, okay? It's thekonaedge.com/win. That's where you can get all those details and get your name into the draw. Until tomorrow, from myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kone Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kone Edge.
Don't forget, if you'd like to access the commercial-free feed of The Kone Edge, all you need to do is head over to thekoneedge.com/support, become a patron, and you'll get access to that feed right away.